All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, joined by former blogging dirty contributor Everett Glaze to discuss the direction of this Atlanta Falcons team and what areas they can get better at this offseason.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
As you know, I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalconFans.com. One of the longest running Falcon fan sites on the internet, also known as Falc Fans on Twitter, and the humble host of this Locked On Falcons podcast, battling back from an injury report with a bout of laryngitis. So if my voice does sound a little bit more crackly than usual, then that's the cause. And so I apologize in advance, but I'm dealing better. I'll power through it. We'll get through this. My guest is, again, Everett Glaze at Ev_G_sportsfan on Twitter, a former contributor to Blogging Dirty. So, Everett, welcome back to the show. I can't remember the last time we had you on, but it was a good little while ago. I think it was last offseason.
Yeah, I think it was the preseason before, you know, the season started, 2017, 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. I'll take your word for it. Doing this daily podcast, it was sometime in the calendar year 2017, so that's all I know. I wanted to talk with you. I've been wanting to get you on for quite some time. I actually wanted to have you on way back when the Falcons lost to the Eagles and get your thoughts on that game. I won't have you drum up any bad memories or whatever you thought on that, but we can focus mainly on the offseason today. Talk maybe a little bit about the draft and the upcoming combine, maybe some guys that you're looking at. Let's jump right into this offseason in terms of looking at where this team needs to go heading into 2018. I noticed the day after the Super Bowl, you were tweeting up quite a bit about where the strengths of this team were and sort of where they were headed and maybe some areas that they needed to get better in. And and now I'm inviting you on the show to give those tweets in audio form and maybe add a little bit to that. But I'll give you the floor and sort of ask you, you know, is this Falcon team in a pretty good position?
As of right now, ironically enough, I wasn't as heartbroken about the way the Falcon season ended this year as opposed to last season. I do think the Falcons are in a pretty good position at this particular point, talent-wise and roster-wise. Based on what I saw in the Super Bowl, it was frustrating, yet not unexpected based on what I had seen throughout the season. And I know we both had spoke on before the season even started and, you know, the whole office of coordinator change, that there was going to be, there was going to be, you know, less production this coming season as opposed to the season prior, due to the fact that Shanahan was gone and we had a new offensive coordinator. But I don't think either one of us could have predicted what happened. So that was the biggest shock to me. There were just so many things on the offensive side of the ball that infuriated me, game plan-wise, personnel-wise. It really infuriated me and frustrated me. So defensively, there are a lot of things to be excited about. Plenty of things. The play of Debo, he started off kind of slowly, but he really came on towards the end of the season and he really started to show, you know, he's the future of that position right now. So being able to see him play the way he's playing was very satisfying considering the fact that when he came out and when he was drafted in the second round, I didn't know that he would be that type of player. I knew he would be a decent player, but I did not know he was going to be that type of player. Going forward, I think right now there need to be some things that offensively need to be fixed. And that's not necessarily personnel. It's not necessarily personnel speak, you know, in regards to the personnel. It's in regards to, you know, where do I start? There are so many things with that offense that just bugged me. And you can't put it all on Sarkisian. And I saw a lot of people calling for his head. And, you know, yeah, there was some, you know, there's some game planning issues. There were some personnel issues, some alignment issues. The list was long. But that whole offense was out of sorts, which is something I didn't expect. I mean, the drops, the miscues, the missed blocks, it was underwhelming for the talent on that team. That's why I say, you know, as far as the team talent-wise is concerned, they're in a prime position. So the question is, when will they put it all together? Will this year be the year that they put it all together with having Sarkisian as a coordinator for the second year? You know, I'm willing to give him that second year. Not many fans are. I'm one of the few that want to see how he does, especially those first quarter of the season. I want to see, you know, how that offense responds as opposed to what was going on last year. Because let's be real, this team was a score away or a play away from beating Philadelphia, who won the Super Bowl. And ironically enough, I don't think I've ever said this before, the defense actually kept us in many of those games that we had throughout the season and even in the playoffs. So I liked where the defense was going. I just need to see more from the offense. But ultimately, the talent is still there on this team. So it just needs to be fine-tuned. And that just needs to be an identity, which I don't believe there was this past season, offensively especially.
Yeah. We talk about Sark a lot on this podcast, so I won't rehash too many things. But I do think a lot of it, you know, not to necessarily put the blame on Sark, but it is one of those things where it's like, you know, you talk about identity and you talk about sort of organization and sort of having a plan on offense and, you know, the ability right. to make adjustments and all those sorts of things that when you're the offensive coordinator and you're in control and you know exactly what you want to do, you see it sort of reflected on the field. And I think that was sort of what was missing from last year's offense and certainly what we had the previous year. And I do, you know, part of me wants to believe that Sark will make significant strides there in the second year. And then the other part of me that is the sort of natural skeptic sort of doesn't necessarily believe that. And so when you look at this team and its ability to compete for a Super Bowl, and I don't typically like to talk about, you know, competing for a Super Bowl, particularly 12 months ahead of a Super Bowl, but that was one of those things that I did notice that you were tweeting about where you were talking about this team's in a position where they can be back. And you're right, you know, obviously being in the Super Bowl 2 years ago and being favored against, you know, the number one seed in the Eagles and being in a position to beat that team and being, you know, not necessarily 2 yards away from being the Super Bowl, but 2 yards away from being in the NFC Championship game, which then they would have been, you know, had a 50-50 shot of being in the Super Bowl. So there's certainly been, you know, competing at the highest levels the last 2 years, so they're not far. And I do wonder a little bit, sort of, if Sark doesn't make that stride, do you believe that with the youth on defense and presumably with some of the additions that the Falcons may make this offseason, will the defense be able to compensate in the eventuality that Sark doesn't make that leap? Or do you think it's sort of going to have to rely on both of those groups, you know, meeting somewhere in the middle where the defense certainly can make strides, but they can't necessarily be expected to carry this team to a Super Bowl in the way that many people thought the Eagles defense had done for most of the season? Or do you feel like one of those units is particularly poised to sort of have to take the reins, as it were, and have to sort of drive the bus? I'm mixing my metaphors here, but, you know, to have to sort of take the lead and push this team to that next level.
You know what's funny? It's funny that you bring that up, because I had a very in-depth conversation with a very good friend of mine, because we both played football. And the thing was, we talked about this team and where it was. And it's almost like the team seems to be at a specific crossroads. And this is what I mean by that. I look at the team and how Quinn is building it. And I can't help but to think about who his mentor was and how he built his team. And by his mentor, I'm talking about, you know, Coach Carroll. And he made so much of a focus to build that defense. He's getting his quarterback killed. And the one thing I hope Quinn isn't doing is putting too much of his focus on that side of the ball, especially considering the stars that he has on offense. So the way I see it, they have to meet each other halfway. I don't see it because of the, you know, the resources that have been, you know, that have been brought in and that have been spent on the offense before Quinn even got here, there has to be a halfway point, because as good as this defense can be, the offense can be that much better. And it to me, it would be a waste of the talent of someone like Julio Jones and, you know, even Matt Ryan, to trying to scale them back to being that smash mouth type of team. Now, truth be told, it worked before with the Hall of Famers and Peyton Manning. He won his last Super Bowl with a highly you know, built Denver Broncos defense. So it's possible. But I don't know if I think Quinn should put all of his eggs in one basket in that particular manner, because the only thing that concerns me is that at a certain point, it's going to fizzle out, because you and I both know free agency and how the CBA is now. You can't keep these type of players on the roster at all times. So I think the offense, I do think the defense will make another leap next season, but I don't think that will be enough. I don't think the defense will be able to carry this offense, especially considering the division that we're in, especially considering that. Because, I mean, New Orleans isn't going away. Tampa Bay, I don't know. Tampa Bay is always an anomaly. They always win the offseason, but during the season, they just, like, fall flat. I'm not exactly sure. And, of course, you have Cam and the Panthers. I just don't believe that we can just focus on the defense doing their thing and just, you know, and building off of that. And that's what I fear Quinn is attempting to do going forward. Because if you look at what Sark has done his first season, I looked at the things that he would do, or the play selections and the personnel groupings that he would put out there, like one play after the other, and there really wasn't any sense around what he was doing. So the question that I have at this particular point is, I would like to know what Quinn was thinking, because to me, they have to meet halfway. There's no way around it. If you want to be a complete team in this league, you have to be able to meet halfway at this particular point, especially considering what they already have on offense. You just can't waste it. You can't waste the talent that you have. So that's what I feel. I feel it has to be a halfway type of thing. Now, I can't say, or you know what, and truth be told, I wouldn't be surprised if this defense was, I don't think I ever see this defense as dominant, but I do see them as highly above average. So I don't know whether they could be that team where they could just rely on the defense. So it has to be a halfway thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I know a lot of people are very optimistic about the defense, and I've certainly been known to be underrate certain areas of this team in the past and look very silly doing so. But yeah, like I particularly this year, I'm not expecting it. It certainly could happen, but I'm not expecting this defense to suddenly become like, oh, they're the best defense in the league. But I do sort of expect them, and I think they're, you know, if they're not already there yet, they're right on the cusp of being there, which is a defense that we know can sort of go up against these high level offenses and throw a wrench at least in their offenses and keep these teams from, you know, going out there like we've seen in past years with the Falcons defense and putting 30 burgers and 40 burgers up against us and keep this game very manageable for the offense to take care of. And I think, you know, if you're in the optimistic mindset, which I rarely am, but, you know, I will acknowledge from time to time. I do think, you know, if you look at 2016 and you say, you know, that was a year where we had all offense and very little defense. And last year, I wouldn't say that we were all defense, but, it did seem like the defense was sort of doing the brunt of the heavy lifting down the stretch. Mm-hmm. More so than the offense. And the hope is that, you know, those two things, as you say, can sort of meet in the middle somewhere this year. And you don't necessarily need the defense to be the best defense in the league. And you don't necessarily need the offense to be what it was 2 years ago in 2016, but you just kind of need them to both be, you know, sort of top 10 caliber units. And if that's the case and you get the right sort of matchups and guys stay healthy and whatnot, then you'll definitely be right back in the hunt again this upcoming season. And then, you know, whoever, you know, whatever happens. But certainly I think there's every reason for people to expect the Falcon team to be back in the postseason and certainly in the mix as a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, exactly. You know what was very surprising to me this past season? The offense was, they just underwhelmed as a whole, and they still managed to make it to the playoffs and even win an away game. So the talent is there. The talent is, I mean, there's no doubt about it. This team has very few holes, so to speak. It's there. It's just about putting it together at this point, and they have to be halfway if they really want to make a Super Bowl run. People got so upset with me when I kept telling these people, this is not a Super Bowl team this year. And I saw it, I think I saw it in the first quarter of the season, I want to say. And I just looked at the team and said, this is not a Super Bowl. This is not a Super Bowl caliber team this year. They could be, but there's just so many things, and it was just small things, especially from the offensive side of the ball, that I didn't have confidence that they could go in and beat, especially on the road, teams like Philly, or even, and they even had a chance to win that game, or Minnesota. So it does have to be a halfway thing at this particular point, and I'm really interested to see. Now, you say some people are optimistic, some just, you know, are skeptics like you. Me, I'm more of a realist. You have to show me what you're doing. You have to show me that you're at a certain point before I say, okay, you know what? This team may have something this year. But I have to see, like, to me, the first quarter of the season is going to tell me a lot.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I'll believe it when I see it. And I think there's reasons for people to be optimistic. So I'm not going to be the type of guy that's going to rain on people's parade. I know at some point this offseason, people are going to just be like, you know, penciling the Falcons, or, you know, already making their Super Bowl reservations and whatnot in Atlanta, you know, come April and whatnot. But that's when I tend to tell people to pump the brakes. But like, I do think one parallel that I do think you have to like in watching this team in 2017, for me at least, was how, you know, strong they finished the year, going, you know, 6-2 in the regular season, and then winning that playoff game. And it just sort of reminded me of that 97 team that started off like 0-4 or 1-4 or something like that, and then finished really strong in the second half. And then, of course, sort of built off of that to go to the Super Bowl in 1998. And so, like, that's, you know, you can talk about momentum and whatnot, but it is one of those things where it's like, when you finish relatively strong, then you can feel in a good place that you're starting. You know, last year, you know, it's kind of two opposite things, where last year they did play well down the stretch, but then the ending of that Super Bowl sort of left a really sour taste. And the big question heading into 2017 was how well this team would sort of respond to that level of adversity and whatnot, and the whole Super Bowl hangover stuff. And you can certainly argue that there was, you know, after that first couple of weeks of the season, there was a little bit of that. And you saw it even in those first three wins, where they were sort of, you know, against Chicago and Detroit, they kind of won on some technicalities and whatnot. You know,
yeah,
if the ball had bounced a different way, they could have started that season pretty easily 1-2 as opposed to 3-0. And, you know, that would have changed a very different narrative, you know, heading into that AFC East run over the next month. And so you saw a little bit, and then you saw the team figure it out by midseason. And that's a positive sign, and that's due to the coaching. And we saw improvements on the defensive side. So we saw improvements on the offensive side of the ball with Sark and whatnot and his play calling in the second half. And they ran a little bit more varied offense. I posted a stat on Twitter looking at their personnel groupings from last year. I finally finished charting all their games. And, you know, you saw a lot more variance in their personnel groupings in the second half of the season during that period of time when they went 6-2 than when it was in the first half of the season, when they were pretty basic in terms of what they were using. So that shows growth and whatnot. So I think there's reasons for people to be optimistic. I tend to be of the mindset that people would take that a little bit too far and then start, you know, getting into this whole Super Bowl or best mindset in the spring and summer. And it's like, let's wait till the games actually get played before we start going there. But I certainly think there's reason to be positive. And I think, you know, that leads us to where I want to talk about with this offseason. But before we get there, if we're talking offseason, you know there's no better place to do that than on the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with host John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. That's one of the reasons why I get into all these Twitter arguments with people, various people, particularly about, you know, what areas of where the roster, like, I don't feel like the Falcons are in this sort of dire situation where they have to get this guy, they have to get this guy, they have to upgrade that position,
right,
and they have to do all this, because I do think they're already right there. They could, you know, not realistically, they won't be able to take the same 53 guys, but they can take most of the same guys they had last year, and you can still expect that all you really need is Steve Sarkisian to do a better job, and this team is mm-hmm. a better team with basically the same personnel. So it's not as if people, I think, you know, particularly when it comes to the offensive side of the ball, I've said it a million times, I don't think any of their issues offensively are related to personnel. So, you know, I do think they need to address certain roster spots, but I think it's more of building depth and building towards the long term, because you do have some, particularly on the offensive line and with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, you have some older players there. So you want to certainly replenish, you know, your young depth there, and so that you can still have, you know, pieces down the road, which was a problem with the Smith regime, where they had these older players and they got old and they didn't have the necessary talent to replenish that. And they, you know, fell off of a cliff, after 5 years. I don't want that to happen to Dan Quinn. So I do think they do need to address some issues, but I don't feel like people need to be in this mindset like they need to go out and get that one move that's going to push them over the hump. Because, again, I think the one move that probably arguably could push them over the hump is just Steve Sarkisian, you know, doing 25% better job. And, you know, instead of producing the 15th best offense in the league, if they're the 8th best offense in the league, which, you know, I don't know how much, you know, a jump in points that is, it's probably like 2 or 3 points a game. It's like a field goal game. And all of a sudden you're talking about a very different team that's a much more potent offense week to week.
And you know what's funny? And this is another reason why I don't get very deeply into, you know, the draft until like maybe, you know, 1st of March. The reason being is because everybody starts falling in love with players and saying, oh, this is the one, we have to get him. Not necessarily the case with the Falcons. And the funny thing is, when I looked at them from last season on the offense, yes, Sark didn't do very well in regards to, you know, game planning and some of the play calls that he was making. But this offense was completely out of sorts, no matter how you shake it. Some of the interceptions that Matt Ryan threw were dropped. I mean, I would say maybe 70% of the interceptions that he had were really no fault of his own. I mean, the drops, the fumbles by Devontae Freeman. I mean, the offense as a whole was out of sorts. So if they can just eliminate the errors and he can just do a better job in the second year, they'll be in a different place. So when I look at this offseason, yeah, there are, like you said, there are some depth issues that I think that should be addressed, especially along the defensive line and even along the offensive line. Outside of that, I mean, this team has a good nucleus on both sides of the ball to really, you know, to really get something going and really be a contender going forward.
And yeah, I think, you know, I think when we talk about the defense making that stride, I think to me, the two areas where I do have concerns on that side of the ball are with the pass rush and with the cornerback depth. And I, you know, say what you want to say about Jalen Collins off the field, but, you know, and not to sit here and be like, we wouldn't have, you know, Jalen Collins was the one reason why we went to the Super Bowl. That's not what I'm saying at all. But if he didn't play as well as he did in that second half of the season without Desmond Trufant, I don't know if the Falcons make the Super Bowl that year. Just because if given how well Robert Alford played down the stretch, how well Brian Poole was playing, and given that a lot of quarterbacks in that second half of that season were just going after Jalen Collins, and he was routinely seeing, you know, 10 and 12 targets in some of those games. And if he had been bad, like that would have been a major, major issue. You're talking like Bene Benwickery type of production. I'm referring to that 300 yard game he gave up to Julio that same season. And it's like, that's not a team that's going to go to the Super Bowl if you have a massive liability on one side of the field. And so I think the Falcons, you know, again, say what you will about Jalen Collins off the field, the person or whatever, but the Falcons do need to get a cornerback that is sort of like what Jalen Collins, the player, was, just in case, you know, mm-hmm. something like that happens again. Because if we have to go back to, you know, relying on Bleedy Ray Wilson, who was fine for the one game he was in, but if that's coming against, you know, this upcoming season against Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or Green Bay or one of these other teams, you know, and we're forced to play these zone coverages like we were in that Minnesota game, Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger and those guys are just going to pick apart that. And if that's a playoff game, then you're looking at losing in the playoffs. And just because you didn't have that cornerback position, and I think we all know the pass rush is certainly key. If you can put pressure on these high-level quarterbacks, you know, that takes pressure off the back end in case you don't have that mm-hmm. high-level performance. And like that, to me, if the pass rush can make that leap, and that's why, you know, we're so focused on this D-tackle position. But I think the mistake that a lot of people are looking at is everybody's looking at, oh, we need to replace Don Terry Poe with another run plugger. And it's like, no, the priority at the D-tackle position really is a guy that can come in on those third downs. And whether that is Don Terry Poe bringing him back, whether that is re-signing Adrian Claiborne, who knows? I tend to be a little bit doubtful that either one of those guys comes back this year. But they do need to find somebody that when they line up in those nickel situations and they go Vic Beasley, Grady Jarrett, somebody, and then Tack McKinley, that, you know, that's a four-man pass rush that hopefully will continue to develop and grow into an elite unit like we saw in Philadelphia, like we saw in Jacksonville, like we saw in Minnesota, as well as other teams. And that will be the difference that they can sort of lean on, even if the offense is sort of still struggling and Sark isn't necessarily putting, you know, massive amount of points. You can get that pressure on the quarterback. You can create turnovers and do all the things that we want to do defensively. So, like, those are the two areas I think where the defense really needs to make strides at. And I think they're in a position, a really good position, to do that. And they don't necessarily have to do that in free agency. I think they can do that early in the draft with, you know, in the first couple of picks in the draft. And, you know, those will be pieces that they can build around and continue to solidify that core of their defense. So I certainly think the Falcons, you know, even though it'll never sound like it, I am optimistic that the Falcons can do some of the things from a personnel standpoint. You know, who knows what Sark does, but the front office certainly can take care of some of their issues, particularly in the defensive side of the ball this offseason. So I think there's reason to be optimistic. It's just a question of, you know, how big an impact can you expect from a rookie if they have to rely on rookies, or do they have sort of necessarily the cap space to go out in there and get a free agent or re-sign some of these guys that are going to be free agents that can be difference makers there.
Yeah. The funny thing is I see all of these mock drafts, and the funny thing is about what Dan Quinn does, I see that he really is a forward thinker in how he's building the roster. So I can't say that I'm necessarily worried or concerned about where he would go in regards to the defensive line. I do have some players that I have my eye on, but I do believe, and just like, there was something else that you said that I absolutely agree with. And I think I think Quinn and Dimitroff may throw some people off by going cornerback fairly early also. Because like you stated, Jalen Collins hurt my feelings with his offseason antics, because like you stated, he started to develop as a player, and without him, I'm not necessarily sure that they even make it to the Super Bowl that year. So to me, that's one of the top positions to be addressed. I mean, people are talking about D-tackle. People are talking about offensive guard. Me personally, offensive guard, I wouldn't be upset, but I just don't see it happening. So, to me, cornerback has to be up there in regards to, you know, depth, because that's where they are right now. They have the solid pieces in place right now, because let's be real about one thing. Tack McKinley. I like Tack McKinley coming out of UCLA, but he far exceeded what I expected. This guy is a straight dog. When I saw him play, he just has a fire in him that now I understand why Quinn wanted him so badly. So, I do think he takes a step forward. Beasley, I don't know. I hope he does. Like you said, the four-man pass rush, I do believe Quinn, being that defensive-minded kind of guy, that he's going to go with trying to get a tackle in that first or second round just for the depth aspect of things. Now, the offseason is going to be interesting, especially in free agency, because The Falcons don't have a lot of money to play with. So the question becomes is who are they going to restructure? Who are they going to bring in? I don't see Poe coming back like you stated as well. So, of course, the defensive line as a whole is going to be the depth of the defensive line, should I say, is going to be one of the priorities, I'm sure. But it's going to be interesting to see which way they go because it's, you know, the cap is getting kind of tight for them. And I know Quinn is going to want to he's going to want to put some youth, especially on the defensive line. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go. But I do believe, and this is just, I'm making this a prediction right now, they're going to go cornerback the top three rounds, I believe.
Yeah,
I think they will. And I know some people will be upset, but I just see it happening.
Yeah, I think it's just so, you know, we started playing a lot more zone down the stretch last year, but we saw in 2016 how much man coverage we played. And certainly when push comes to shove on, you know, on third and six or whatever, we're going to try to man up these guys with Alford and Trufant and, you know, not to label Brian Poole a liability by any means, because I do think, you know, it's a mixed opinion on Brian Poole. It's like he does a lot of things really well and he doesn't do a lot of things particularly great. And it's, you know, you look back and you see that he gave up 84% completion rate last year. Like, you know, I don't want that stat to define his season, but like that, you know, that's just a massive room for improvement, you know? And so it's one of those things, like if you're going to play man coverage and you're going to give up 84, it's just not good enough, you know? So it's one of those things when we get into these critical down situations, that's where sort of the cornerbacks and the pass rush, you know, come into play. And too oftentimes, particularly in the big games, it just didn't seem like those guys, you know, they played well, but they just didn't have that extra oomph to get over that hump a little bit. And mostly, I put most of that on the pass rush more so than the cornerback play, but I certainly think there's certainly room for the cornerbacks to do a little bit more so that even if the pass rush doesn't make that stride, if you have three lockdown man corners, and I've made this comparison a number of times, and then we had Charles McDonald on last week, and he made a similar comparison with the Broncos, with their trio, with Aqib Talib and Chris Harris and Bradley Roby. And when you have three guys that can line up and play that man coverage, then you can start saying, okay, well, let's blitz Devondre Campbell a lot more. Let's bring those five-man pressures because we trust our guys in the back end with Neal, with Alford, with Trufant, with this other quarterback, and with Poole in the mix, and with Allen being able to drop down in the slot as well, that we can line up and man up these guys. And so we can be a little bit more aggressive than Dan Quinn has traditionally been to compensate for maybe that pass rush not making a little bit more growth. So I just think those two entities work, you know, the front end and the back end work in conjunction. And those are two areas where the Falcons do need to try to get better this offseason. And certainly with the cornerback play, getting young quality depth in the draft is going to be immensely beneficial for them. And obviously if you can do that in the draft and get a difference maker at that D tackle position, obviously that's going to have long-term benefits for you because of how young, you know, we have all these guys on rookie contracts and we could have this really great pass rush for many, many years, as opposed to just sort of shuffling the guy in and out like it kind of is with Dontari Poe and Adrian Claiborne, that even if you re-sign these guys, ultimately you're probably just renting them for one or two more years before you can find somebody else to be that long-term asset. So we'll see how it goes, but I certainly think the Falcons are in a promising position right at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm really interested to see how they play free agency. Of course, I hope nobody is hoping for one of those splash signs, because it simply isn't going to happen this offseason. I don't see it.
Yeah.
Poe was the biggest, but outside of him, it's not going to happen. I see a lot of, you know, role players. I mean, I see him may sign Ruben back, maybe, you know, on a cap-friendly deal. But it's not going to be something big. So no first or second day type deals going down in free agency.
Yeah. I mean, and we saw last year, like, the signing they made on the first day was Jack Crawford, who was a guy that probably 80 to 90% of our fan base had never heard of. You know, like, who's this Jack Crawford guy? You know, and I think if that's it's going to be a similar sort of situation where, like, that's about going to be the biggest move that they make, which will be some mid-level D lineman that can sort of be that stopgap in the middle or whatever on the defensive line until we get to the draft, where then we could have a little bit more flexibility at that spot. But we'll see what happens. You mentioned, you know, some guys that you might have your eye on for the combine, but maybe some of you haven't done as much homework on the draft, but maybe some of these guys in the next week or two that you're going to definitely keep your eye on and you're curious to see how they work out and see where the Falcons' interest may lie.
I have been taking a look at a lot of people have created some buzz around certain tackles in the draft, and Taven Bryan has piqued my interest along with Maurice Hurst. And now I really believe Ida Vale won't be that at that particular point. And truth be told, I don't know if they're looking for that type of tackle anyway. And what I do normally when I look at these players, I take a look at Quinn's history and how he drafts his players and what he looks for. And that's why I want to take a specific look at Taven Bryan and Maurice Hurst, because those kind of, you know, embody what he looks for in his players, especially because Taven Bryan is one of those athletic tackles that, you know, Quinn loves. Not necessarily great in regards to technique, and he's, you know, he's unpolished, but he has the athleticism, and he's tough. So that's one player that I really have my eye on. Another one, I don't know whether they will go this way in the first round, and I would say I'm 95% certain that they won't, but of course I've been wrong before. Isaiah Wynn. I see people talking about guard in the first round, but I just don't know if Quinn's headed there. If it is, color me wrong, but I just don't see any scenario where he would go and get a guard the first round. I mean, now, that being stated, and the only reason I say this is because I think about what he did with the guard position the past few drafts. I mean, in the first one, he got Switzer. Now, the funny thing about Switzer is I see a lot of people were down on him. He was bad, but, I mean, and his biggest issue is his footwork and getting to the second level, but he actually did fairly decently for, you know, a first-year starter. So I don't know whether Quinn is going to consider that as dire a position to begin with to go first round for a guard. I could be wrong, and I wouldn't be hurt at all if he went for Isaiah Wynn at that particular point. But that's where my head is with that. So possible, not necessarily the case, but I'm really looking at all of the defensive tackles, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know specifically about DeRon Payne. I saw him play, and I think he has a massive amount of potential, but I don't. There's just something about him. He's not very quick off the snap, which is what Quinn likes. So those are just a few players. I haven't really gotten into it very deeply, but, you know, those are some players I was really going to keep my eye on. Taven Bryan, he's really piqued my interest, so I want to see what he does in the combine and how they, you know, talk to him, whether they, you know, they interview him or if they talk to him at the combine. Because, you know, when they show interest, because, you know, the Falcons kind of telegraphed their moves in regards to where they want to go in the draft. They did it last year. They did it the year before. I mean, I knew they were going Keanu Neal before, like a week before the draft even hit. So that's what I do. I base what I look for and who I have my eyes on based on his, you know, his tendencies.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where they go this year. And I do have some additional thoughts on that. But first, I want to remind you guys that the NBA All-Star break is over and you guys can stay locked on the rest of the NBA season on the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find shows such as Locked On Hawks with host Brad Rowland talking about your favorite last place Eastern Conference team, wherever podcasts can be found, including Spotify. I think you're right. I did a mock draft earlier this week where I had them picking Isaiah Wynn, not necessarily because I think he will be the pick, but I do think he's sort of a unique sort of player that fits so well with what they want to do that he's more the exception to the rule than necessarily the most likely outcome. And we'll see what happens. It certainly is going to be an interesting offseason, although I do think it's going to be kind of a boring offseason. But sort of, you know, when it's all said and done, where the Falcons are at certain positions, particularly on both of those lines, on offensive and defensive line, I think will, you know, they could be in a slightly better place, or they could be in a much, much better place. So, you know.
And it's honestly, for me, I'm wondering, and always with Dan Quinn, the free agency always lets you know how he feels about his roster. I mean, if he just chill at guard, or if he's just chill at defensive line, or if he's chill at a certain position, he feels a certain type of way about the players that he already has. So you really can't expect him to go really deep on it, you know, come the draft. Like I said, with Wynn, yeah, I'm sure he embodies what Quinn likes. Now, if he's there, because who was the player that everybody just knew Quinn was going to go after when it came down to it last year? It was a guard, and I can't remember his name.
Forrest Lamp.
Forrest Lamp. He just knew he was going right after him. And what did he do? He jumped up and got Tack McKinley, and nobody's questioning that at this point.
Yeah. That was, you know, I always tell people, like, the Falcons, you know, don't go into the draft with, like, the Falcons need to get this guy and this guy and this guy, because they will throw a curveball at you every single time, mm-hmm. and you're going to come away like everybody was when we drafted Tack McKinley. It was like, you know, oh, okay. Like,
right.
And then, you know, then he comes out on a stage and acts like a crazy person. And it's like, okay, I don't know how to feel about this pick, but I like this crazy guy that's out here cussing to Dion on stage on national TV. Right. And then, you know, he winds up doing what he did as a rookie. So, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I go in every draft just expecting to be disappointed, because I'll have a certain group of guys that I think the Falcons should draft this guy, and they never draft those guys. And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, you know, the guys I got were pretty good, and they usually turn out to be a little bit, at least recently, they turn out to be a little bit better than I expect them to be. And that's, you know, that's a kudos to Quinn and his regime, that, you know, it's like, oh, like, this guy's pretty good, and then they turn out to be better than you think. And it's like, you know, they do know what they're doing. As much grief as I give them from time to time, they are pretty good at their jobs.
And I know that whole, when I can remember the backlash when he went after Keanu Neal. And I think we all had the player that we loved. I mean, you and I, we were like, I still can't quit Miles Jack. And I was in my soul. I was like, please, please. But I already knew. I had a very good idea that they were going Keanu Neal. So when it happened, I wasn't surprised, but I was still a little hurt. and that turned out to be one of the best picks he's made since he's been here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that's why when I go into these drafts, of course we all have players that we fall in love with. But, oh, if they could pick this player here, that would be it. But I'm tending to trust his mindset and how he picks his players, because what happens is once he gets them and he molds them to what he wants them to be, they end up being pretty decent players. I know there were a lot of people expecting him to get De'Ron Lee, and I was like, why get De'Ron Lee when you can get somebody? That's why I wasn't upset at all about the Debo pick, but I did think he was a little light to play the middle linebacker position. I just thought he'd be a better Will than he would be a Mike. Well, he's proving me wrong, and he keeps doing it. So I'm inclined to trust Quinn and his pick, especially the first couple rounds. And I just sit, like I said, we all have players that fall in love. But that's why I try not to get too deep into, especially now with Quinn, because he looks for a specific player. Not necessarily, you know, somebody that's blowing up stats for a specific team, but playing for a specific scheme. When he looks for players, he looks for specific things that he knows will work with what he does. So when I look at these drafts, you know, going forward, and I take a look at these players, and you've done it, I've done it, we've all done it. We look at their face like, oh, the next pick is Tack McKinley. We go, oh. And then you take a look at what he does, and okay, maybe that'll work. You know, I mean, I can see why you like him. But then you put him in that attacking style that Quinn loves, and he just explodes. So I'm inclined to trust Quinn right now, especially within the first three rounds with his picks, because he's really good with the talent evaluation. The only thing that concerns me about this whole thing, and that's something else that we didn't mention, was it's kind of hard for a team to lose a Super Bowl. have two new coordinators to even make it as far as they did, especially in this day and age. So talent-wise, offense, you know, offseason-wise, I'm interested to see what happens, but this is going to be a very boring offseason for the Falcons fans. Because he has things in place that he loves at this particular point. And at this particular point, he's just looking at depth. Of course, if you get a top notch player that you absolutely positively have to have, he'll go and get him, just like he did with Tack. He had to have Tack, and I saw that. So he went and got him. So it's going to be a pretty boring offseason, but it's going to be interesting to see how he kind of molds it and how he adds on to either both sides of the line or whether he decides to go wide receiver, because like you said, we can know the position now. So I even expect a wide receiver maybe in the late rounds. So it's going to be interesting, but it's like you stated, it's going to be pretty boring.
Yeah. I think, you know, we talked about it to wrap up. We talked about sort of how close they are. And I think that's pushing a lot of fans, you know, and the people that I'm thinking of, they will be the bane of my existence for the next couple of weeks. You know, the people out there, they're like, well, we got to go get a tight end like Jimmy Graham or whoever it is. But it's like, I think because of how close they are, people are looking for sort of that one piece that's going to push the Falcons over the top. And I think that's completely opposite to how this organization is going to approach it, because we talk about how they've built, how successful they've been. And it's like, why would they change? Like, they haven't been getting no splash signing. You know, I guess Poe is technically a splash signing because he was a Pro Bowl player, but you know, that didn't happen right at the beginning of the offseason. It was sort of, they let the market come to them in that way, and sort of they were able to get Poe on a much cheaper deal than I think a lot of us thought that he would wind up signing. Right. That's why initially in the offseason when it was being discussed about the Falcons being interested in Don Terry Poe, it's like, I don't know if this is a good deal for the Falcons, because they're going to give all this money to a guy who's dealing with back injuries and, you know, weight issues and all these sorts of things. And has been basically a declining player the last couple of years in Kansas City due to overuse and all these sort of things. So why would you want to lock up that guy to a long-term deal? But then they got him on a real bargain deal, and it was like, yeah, that's a brilliant move all of a sudden when you know, instead of paying, you know, $30 million, you're getting, you know, like you did for Paul Soliai, you're getting him for $8 million. But I think because this team is so close, they're just like, why do we, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We don't need to make a splash move. Right. We just need to continue to make steady progress as we've done with focusing on the draft, tweaking some things in free agency as we do. But we don't necessarily have to feel like, you know, like we were in 2011, where it's like, okay, Julio's going to be the last piece of the puzzle. Once we add Julio to this mix, that's going to push us over the edge. They don't have to feel that way because they don't have these aging veterans with Tony Gonzalez in a closing window with an older offensive line. I mean, they do have an older offensive line at this point with Mack and Lavitre and Schrader getting up there in years. But, like, it is one of those things with the defense being as young as it is and have as many guys on their rookie contract, they don't have to feel like, oh, no, we need to make that big splash, because once, you know, the Grady Jarretts and the Vic Beasleys and the Deion Joneses get to their rookie contract, at the end of the rookie, we're not going to be able to keep those guys, and it's all going to fall apart. So I don't think they're going to be in that mindset at all. So, you know, it's just going to be a pretty boring offseason. They'll make a couple of moves. They'll re-sign some guys. And they'll focus on building through the draft as they always do. And I think that's the right way of doing it. And I think, as we've said a number of times, they've, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and they've done an excellent job so far in the last 2 years, being right there, you know, on the verge of things, and they don't necessarily need to blow things up and do this big sexy splash move to, you know, be that sort of get over the hump move that was a quasi mistake that the old regime made. And then once that didn't work, as we saw in 2012, they didn't have anything in position to sort of reload quickly and get back on track, and it all fell apart. And I don't think that's a mistake. I think, you know, say what you will about Dimitrov, and I've said a lot about Dimitrov over the years, he's not going to make the same mistake twice. You know, he's going to learn from his errors and his missteps. And so they're not going to be in a position where all of a sudden we get to 2020 and everything falls apart because Julio got old and Sanu got old and Alfred got old and the offensive line got old. And all the players that we brought in to try to potentially replace those guys you know, the Levine Toilolos as it was with Tony Gonzalez, or, you know, not having wide receiver depth after Roddy White and Julio got hurt, and not having, you know, trying to think Steven Jackson was going to replace Michael Turner, and all the, you know, we can spend another hour talking about all the mistakes that they made in the previous, but they're not going to do that again. So I do think people, when they get into this mindset of like, oh, who's that one free agent, or who's those two free agents that are going to push this team over the hump, I think that's the entirely wrong mindset that this organization is going to be in. I think they're in the right place. And, you know, I will certainly be criticizing them, as I always do, for everything. But, like, I do think that doesn't necessarily mean that I think this team is misstep. It's just, it's easy for me to focus on the small details that they miss when every, you know, the train is still going in the right direction. It's still going at full speed. So they're in a positive place. And, you know, don't panic.
They're in a very good place.
That's what I would say to the listeners. Don't panic when we get to March 14th and the Falcons are dead quiet and there's no rumors. You know, Adam Schefter isn't breaking this story about, you know, all these other guys are signing elsewhere and the Falcons just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. It's like, it's cool. It's fine.
Right. You know what's funny? It's always the teams that do so much in the offseason that don't necessarily make a big splash in the season. I mean, how many years have we seen Tampa Bay go through so many picks, make these big splash grade and sign and do all of this just to tank the season? So just relax, fans, just relax and let it play out. Because at this particular point, Dan Quinn has a system. He has a culture going right now. And whatever he does, every move that he makes, he may need help with the game management aspect of things, but he's done very well with the team building aspect and the talent evaluation aspect. And you have to trust him right now until he gives you reason to do otherwise. So for me, I'm just willing to sit back and say, okay, let's see what you do.
Yeah. So Everett, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter and elsewhere, and if they want to talk Falcons with you.
My Twitter handle is Ev_G_sportsfan on Twitter. Hit me up at any time. I love to talk Falcons all day, every day.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on and talking Falcons with me. I want to say the last time we were on, we were talking the same thing about regression, and we went on for a really long time talking about how you know, things were going to regress, but it was still going to be okay. You know, this, so I feel like that, you know, this is what we have to do every year. You know, we'll do it again in a couple of months, I guess.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, man.
All right, man. Have a good night.
All right. You too.
All right, guys, there you have it. Let's get out of here. You know how to hit me up. I'm FalcFans on Twitter. If it's podcast related and you want to tweet at me, then just let me know in that tweet. But if it is podcast related, then just go ahead and send it to the podcast's Twitter handle, which is Locked On Falcons. Of course, Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. If you don't like Twitter, but you prefer this other social media platform, if you don't like social media at all and you just want to send an old-fashioned email like it's 1999, by all means, you can do so. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. You can also visit LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily, and leave a comment there to get your feedback, your comments, your questions, any of those sorts of things. Yeah, that's it, guys. Appreciate you guys listening, tuning in. We'll be still talking more Combine in the coming days. I hope to put something up tomorrow. I'm 50% confident that we'll have some content up tomorrow, but maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. I don't have anything right now nailed down, but I'm hoping to work those phone lines. But certainly we'll have some content up very soon, dealing more with the Combine and sort of guys to keep an eye on. And maybe we'll get some quote-unquote experts that may, unlike Everett and I, have done a lot more homework on maybe some of these D tackles as well as other position groups, and talk about maybe some of these guys that might test well, might test poorly, and where their draft stock could be a week or so from now. So stay locked on, stay tuned to that, and we'll be back soon. Talk more Falcons. more draft, more combine, more free agency, all that stuff, more offseason.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.